We made this.
Welcome back to You Have Been Watching, a podcast devoted to looking in-depth into the fascinating curiosity that is the British television sitcom, part of the We Made This podcast network. I'm your host, Tony Black, and I'm joined again by my co-host, Robert Turnbull, for part two of our British TV sitcoms theme tunes top 10. And last time we did numbers 10 down to 6, and we had gems as varied as One Foot in the Grave, The Vicar of Dibley, Bread, Steptoe and Son, all kinds of things. But now we're down to the top five. Five down to one. This is where the best of the bunch for us, Rob, I think, comes in, isn't it?
This is where things get serious, yeah. No more messing about.
No more messing about. So why don't we just jump straight on into it then and go into our number fives. So your number five is actually my number one. So I'm going to save that as a surprise for later, and we'll see which one that is.
Oh, right. Yes, good idea.
So, yeah, we'll come to that in a bit. My number five is a show, you know, last week I said the one that is probably the least remembered was Bread. Bread from the 80s.
Taking out your big hold bread. Bread.
A tart, Aveline. But in this episode, I would say of the ones we're talking about, the most obscure one is my number five, which I love this show, and I grew up watching, and I really wish people know more about this and find it on BritBox or whatever. George and Mildred from the 70s, spin-off to Man About the House, which was a well-loved 1970s sitcom, which I thought was okay when I've watched bits and bobs of it, but George and Mildred was the one I loved. Because
it's far superior,
far better, and it takes two characters who were like a landlord and landlady in that show, George and Mildred, played by Brian Murphy and Uther Joyce, and gives them their own show for multiple seasons, and it's wonderful. It's so funny and it's so good. And Uther Joyce, who died long before her time, like a good 40 odd years ago now, is wonderful in this. They both are.
She is outstanding.
Yeah, she really is.
Brian Murphy's fantastic as well, but she is just another level of comic actor. I adore her. Yeah.
She's so good. And that's just, it's just so funny. And this is interesting because this has two themes, because the first season had a theme.
Yes.
Which was by Johnny Hawksworth. And so what I'm going to do is as you'll have seen, we've been playing some of the themes alongside as we've been talking, I'm going to play, this is the theme we're going to play now to season one, okay, series one. So this is the theme to series one. So that was season one. Series two to five had a theme by Roger Webb, which was different. So this is the theme to series two to five.
Thank you.
Now, I don't know if you managed to listen to both of them, Rob. What was interesting was that I remember the series 2 to 5 theme much more than I do the series 1 theme, to be honest. But I really like both of them. And they're both quite different in many ways, I think.
Yeah, I mean, the first one obviously is very much a theme tune. And it's a very 70s kind of theme tune. Yeah. But I think also it does have that little edge of kind of like, because the title sequence is kind of showing their courtship and their romance and stuff, which is quite a nice little thing to show that they're not just, you know, this angry, miserable couple. But the first theme has a sort of a slight kind of harking back. You know, maybe there's a slight edge of that kind of like 50s Teddy Boy music just underneath it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, not as overt as something like As Time Goes By in that kind of like reminiscing or you know, Birds of a Feather or anything like that. But there's just a little bit underneath the surface there.
Yeah, I think you're right there. It has that sort of like edge to it, doesn't it? In that way. And it's because, and there's piano in there and it's a bit more jaunty and, you know. I like it a lot, though. I think it's a lot of fun. And it's sort of, it again, it's that juxtaposition with how, you know, the gag really of George and Mildred. I mean, the show might now be a little bit old fashioned, to say the least, in that it was really that Mildred was a bit of a shrew in many ways, and she was like, George, and all this kind of thing, and he was like clueless, bumbling husband. And I think that's probably a bit dated, but they did love each other, though, at the end of the day.
They did love each other.
And there was a sweetness to it at the same time, which I think is why people love those characters so much. But the theme by Roger Webb, who was a jazz pianist, and he had a trio in the 60s and beyond. He did songs that were sung by people as varied as Betty Davis, Rex Harrison, Johnny Mathis, Shirley Bassey. He was involved in movies and all this kind of thing. So, you know, he's got a big career beyond this. But you can hear that sort of jazzy sort of late 70s thing going on into the set. And in the second to fifth series credits, they were differently, but they didn't have the same courtship sort of photos. It was always set to the characters arriving into some situation where...
Yeah, it's a very different... Not just from like the first series onwards, it's a very different kind of feature because it's almost incidental music.
Yeah, 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 it is, isn't it?
It's very understated and yeah, basically the title sequence becomes a little funny scene. I think even in a couple of them, or I think the last series, it just becomes a sort of an abstract scene, but it's basically a little funny scene with audience laughter on it.
Yeah, yeah.
And the music's just kind of underneath, just kind of like... But it's that kind of just under the surface. It's really a little bit different. It's actually, I think it's quite sweet. Yeah. I think there's a real sweetness to it. Because again, you see George being a bit of an idiot and you see Mildred rolling her eyes, but you also see a certain affection in those scenes.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I don't know the answer to this. I wonder what spearheaded that change, really, in terms of the music, why they wanted to go into that slightly different way of doing things. I'm not sure what that was about, but I think they both work in different ways. But it was the second series onwards theme that's always stuck in my head as it's not a big showy one. It's not necessarily as clever as some of these others, but I really think it, and I don't even know if it really reflects the characters in a way. In the same way, I don't know. I can't honestly say that it does, but there's something about it which I think works quite well. And maybe, like you say, it was that it's the way that it's presented with the incidental situation and the incidental music nature of it that was slightly different. So maybe that's why it stuck in my head more than, you know. And honestly, I can't, because I watched them so long ago when I was a child, I can't distinguish season 3 from season 1 episode. Do you know what I mean? Some of the other shows we've talked about where One Foot in the Grave, I know all that show really well inside out. But so maybe that's part of it. I don't know.
I wonder whether the piece of music, there's something where it kind of evolves in terms of the audience reaction to it. Because... yeah, the sort of the first couple of series where they have the new piece of music, it like you say, it's not showy. It doesn't feel necessarily like a theme tune. Just have these little vignettes that are kind of like demonstrating the characters while the credits come up, and that little piece of music playing underneath, which is a nice little piece of music. And then it's, I think it's the fourth or the fifth, you know, series towards the end, where they do away with the vignettes, and it's just this kind of like silhouette of the characters. But it's the same piece of music. It's the same little piece of music. And interestingly, I think when you look at that abstract sequence, suddenly the piece of music sounds like a theme tune, strangely enough. And I wonder whether it's this thing of they didn't necessarily want a showy theme tune. They wanted something that demonstrates the characters. So they had that more subtle music and they had a scene. But by the time you get to the fourth or the fifth series, the audience are familiar with the characters and they're familiar with the piece of music. So you can do away with the scene because the music has that connection to that. I don't know. Or maybe it's nothing. Maybe it's all just to do with budget and who they owed money for. It's probably that, wasn't it?
Maybe we're looking too hard. I don't know. Maybe. But there's always a story beneath a lot of these things, though. So
There is always
maybe
one.
That's out there. So if anyone does know a bit more about the music for George and Mildred, let us know, because that'd be interesting. There's not a lot out there on it. So that, yeah. Because it's not necessarily a show that has quite stayed in the public cultural consciousness in the same way, I think. So
No, it hasn't. And I suspect because both theme tunes are a little bit more subtle and less showy, they haven't floated around the same way that something, you know, we've talked about like Steptoe and themes like that have kind of stayed there.
Yeah, absolutely. Mm. Interesting. Yeah, so let's move on to number four. So my number four is the music from Allo Allo. The classic wartime Jeremy Lloyd, David Croft comedy from the mainly the 80s, a little bit into the 90s. Pretty legendary British comedy, this. Ran for years, had loads of episodes. I think, and this is one we'll definitely do eventually, but I think it's a show that absolutely has, whether the music has quite leapt out of beyond the... into the consciousness of the culture, I don't know. But the show absolutely is still there, in that you'll still see on Twitter people say things like, as if all of Madonna is the big boobies, or, you know, good morning, or, you know, all this. I mean, it had so many catchphrases.
Listen very carefully, I shall say this on a once.
Exactly. It's all, you still get it. You still see it out there in meme form and all this kind of thing. And the theme tune, which was composed by David Croft, the writer, and Roy Moore, and it was at the start and at the end of each episode, and it's a French melody performed on accordion as part of a waltz. It not only captures, obviously, the fact, because it's set in the war, it's set in World War II in France, it's all about René, the cafe owner who's got mistresses, and he's getting involved with the resistance and the Nazis, and it's and the British RAF men and all this,
He just wants a quiet life.
And he just can't... Everybody just wants to get him involved in stuff. He's like, oh my God.
Poor René.
I think this really... Both establishes the theme and where we are with this sitcom, but also it's beautiful. It's actually a really beautiful piece of music when you listen to it fully all the way through. And in the end credits especially, you get to hear it all the way. And I think it's gorgeous.
Yeah, I'd agree with you. And I think I kind of, you know, we've touched a little bit of this on the last episode. And for me in particular, I'm very fond of theme tunes that evoke the characters or the setting that we're about to experience. And I think that Croft, and I mean Croft and Perry / Croft and Lloyd, but I think his stuff, whomever he was working with, they're very good at theme tunes. You know, Heidi High is a great one, which sort of has that. It sounds like a 50s, sounds like a sort of a 50s Teddy Boy song. More recently, he had Oh Dr. Beeching, which is a, obviously that song's like a sort of a parody of Oh Dr. Porter. But it's great because it sounds like one of those sort of Gracie Fields post-war kind of songs. And I think
You Rang My Lord.
Hello, Hello
well.
Is...
That's another one.
You know what? I actually don't... I think You Rang My Lord is one of the weak...
Do you think so?
Is one of the... Yeah, sorry to shut you down there, Terry.
That's all right. I just...
but only because You Rang My Lord sounds more like a sitcom doing a parody.
Maybe.
And especially because that was around the same kind of time as we had Jeeves and Wooster, who had one of the most outstanding theme songs, that old piece of theme music. I think that You Rang My Lord kind of like sits in the shadow a little bit. But still, they're kind of, I mean, yeah, to be fair, they are kind of going for a sort of a 30s jazz kind of vibe. And so I think that Hello, Hello is like, it's a brilliant composition. Again, I'm not the world's biggest Hello, Hello fan. I've reevaluated it a little in my later years and have a stronger appreciation for it now. But I've always liked the theme tune. And you've got to remember as well that Hello, Hello was also part parody.
Yeah,
it's not, you know, it's like a lot of these other sitcoms we're talking about are sitcoms about themselves in their own right, in their own existence. But of course, Hello, Hello was kind of like riffing on the very popular wartime dramas that had been in the early 80s, which had similar kind of theme tunes, but slightly more serious, more portentous theme tunes. So I think it is, like you say, it's beautiful. When you hear the full composition, it's a beautiful piece of music that you can just sit in and listen to. And it absolutely screams France for this incredibly culturally insensitive, borderline racist English sitcom about the French. But you hear that little and suddenly you're like, I'm in Provence. It's just like, it's a really evocative piece of music that again, we've talked about this. I think you could take it out of the context of that sitcom, and I think it has, you know, has been done, and you could drop it into something. You could do a serious drama where you've got characters going to France and you play that music over the journey footage, and I think it wouldn't seem silly, it wouldn't seem out of place, because it's, you know what, I think it's an earnest composition. It's been composed in good faith, even if the sitcom itself is all about cultural cliches and you know, everyone is a stereotype, from the Brits to the French to the Germans to the Italians, everyone is a stereotype. That piece of music actually was written in earnest and in good faith and reflects the culture more accurately than any of the performances in the sitcom.
I think you're right, actually. I do. And that's strange. And given it is a parody of particularly Secret Army, which was a radio, a wartime radio drama, as you mentioned, which is a fact I think massively underknown by people who watch Hello, Hello, particularly now, if you ever catch it. And it, I mean,
well,
it's been on rotation on UK Gold and now on BritBox like for decades, you know. But I don't know if people would really know that it was designed as a parody as such.
I think it's because it outlived those original shows by so much, you know. It sort of like it surpassed them.
Yeah, I think so. So it's interesting, given that they didn't go for a parodic theme, that they went for something that's actually a lovely piece of orchestral music in many ways, that evokes France, that evokes the war, that has that tinge of romance, well, it has that romance to it, because obviously the central thing about it is that René's having an affair with Yvette, everyone actually, yeah. He's having it away with everybody.
You stupid woman. He was just helping her to put the glasses away.
And his long-suffering wife,
this poor
Edith,
girl.
It has that romance to it, but it also has that. In fact, Edith Carmen Silvera, she recorded an LP of this as a song in the 80s.
Yes,
as well. Again, the fact that
massively underrated performer.
Yeah,
I love her.
Yeah, and she was great in this. And they, I mean, they were all really good performers in this. Even if, like you say, much like Are You Being Served, although I don't think it's quite as dodgy as that now, but some of some of it's dated, and you know, it is very silly. I mean, it is incredibly daft, and but it's not, they don't go for that kind of parody music, and I actually think that works really well. I think it actually helps give it a little bit of gravitas in a way, which is surprising.
It does. I think it helps to prevent it from being annoying. you know, when you've got all these, like, these outrageous accents and farcical, you know, stage farce, basically, most of it. It's kind of like long-running stage farce. When you've got that kind of, like, crazy, silly, you know, characters called Herr Flick of the Gestapo, it's ridiculous. But to have this very real and very good piece of music, it grounds it in a way. And I think it brings a little bit of authenticity to it, and it prevents it from running away with itself.
Do you know what? I had a friend who lived in Doncaster, and there was a hairdresser's called Herr Flick there. And I swear it was the best thing I've ever. I almost wanted to travel to Doncaster to get my hair cut just so I could go to that place and go, I love this. Well done. Brilliant.
That's amazing. When I was a kid, I thought his name was Heflick.
Heflick.
As in Heflick. It wasn't until I was a bit older that I realised, oh no, it's Herr Flick. That's a much better joke.
Yeah. So good. So yeah, Allo Allo is mine. Your number four, Rob, I think is probably, well, it is still the longest running British sitcom of all time. And it's probably one of the most famous and in some ways one of the most well-known scores in British sitcom history. So which one is this?
Yeah, it's Last of the Summer Wine. And you say, I think it's still the longest running sitcom in the world.
Is it the world? Yeah.
I think it's still in the world. If we don't include things like The Simpsons, which is animated, then I think in terms of live action sitcom, I think it is still up there as the longest running.
Yeah.
And it's Ronnie Hazelhurst again, and I would be prepared to go on record, I think, and say that this is probably Ronnie Hazelhurst's best composition.
Mm. It could be.
Particularly if we're talking about sitcoms. Yeah. I think it may be his best composition. We've talked about, very briefly in the past, I've talked about my relationship with Last of the Summer Wine. I am not a huge Roy Clark fan. I don't think that Last of the Summer Wine, it, at the very least, I don't think it's a very consistent show. I mean, it ran for, you know, 30-odd years. I think there are some great episodes in there. There are some very bad episodes in there, and there are lots of dull episodes in there, but it's one of those shows which has a huge place in my heart. You know, I watched it from an early age. I think for a lot of people, they watched it from an early age, and it ran for such a long time as well. I mean the time period in terms of people it encompasses, there are people in their early 20s now who still would have watched this sitcom as kids growing up. It did, you know, it stopped in, I think it was 2010, and so it's the theme tune is so ingrained, and it is one of the most famous theme tunes in British sitcom culture.
Yeah.
And it's beautiful.
Mm, mm.
And this is the thing about it. It's in a similar way to the theme tune for Vicar of Dibley that we talked about in the previous episode. It's a piece of music that is designed to bring back memories of a kind of a misty, forgotten past. And again, that kind of past that never really existed, probably. And it does this fantastically. And bearing in mind, it was written in the early 70s, this theme tune, you know. And so even in the early 70s, it was designed to be nostalgic for, you know, 40 years before. And now here I am, you know, 40-something-year-old man, and it, for me, it is nostalgic to the early 80s when I watched it, because the music itself, it's like melodic nostalgia. It's almost hard to describe it, because it has that slightly melancholy edge to it. It's a very sweet piece of music. It's a very gentle piece of music. And you listen to it and you do imagine rolling hills and Yorkshire dales. And it really paints a picture And I'm sure you know this. There are words to it. There is a version with words, which very sort of like 70s kind of like love song kind of vibe almost, or at least love song to the past. But I think it works in its best form, you know, as a piece of music, as an instrumental.
No, I think so.
And I just love it.
It is beautiful. It is really nice. And it fits so well with, even though Last of the Summer Wine obviously always has, it ends with some sort of, most of the time it ends with some sort of zany escapade with whichever of the characters are in the mix, you know, whether it's Foggy or Compo or, you know,
Seymour or whoever, yeah.
Clegg and all this. But it is a very slow moving pastoral show for the most part, you know, because it's about old age pensioners. And in this beautiful setting in the Yorkshire Dales and all this, it absolutely fits. And what I thought was interesting was how the BBC didn't want it to be that mellow at first, and they wanted him to do much more of a speeded up, faster theme for comic effect. And he didn't really want to do that. And they eventually accepted the theme that became, you know, legendary. And that's a classic example of where, you know, stop sticking your nose in, guys. This guy knows what he's doing. You know, it's like going to John Williams and saying, yeah, I'm not sure that theme for Star Wars is that good. Or, you know, that Superman theme could do with being a little bit more action heavy with a few more drums. It's like, just back off. Like, just fucking back off. He knows what he's doing.
Ronnie knows what he's doing, guys.
You know, he then continued to compose music for each episode until his death, because he's, you know, the show outlasted him, basically, which is incredible. You know, the amount of music he wrote for this show is more than he would have done for anything else. You know, it's astonishing, really.
Oh, incredible. I mean, must have been his retirement, probably, just working on this.
Probably. Because it ended about 3 years after he died. So, it is a classic.
It is a classic, and it's... again, you know, we could talk about Ronnie Hazelhurst a lot, and I know we're going to talk about Last of the Summer Wine at some point, so I'm sure we'll touch on this. So, not, you know, I don't want to get bogged down on it, but it is a beautiful composition. I grew up in the Northeast. I was born in Yorkshire, and sort of grew up, as you can tell from my thick Yorkshire accent, grew up in the Northeast and Yorkshire and Cumbria and all these kind of areas. So the areas that it's set, that, you know, that actually is my childhood. That's my, you know, my memories. And so this piece of music, it doesn't just, for me, hark back these positive nostalgic memories of watching the show as a kid. It harks back to my actual experience. It sounds, that theme sounds like walking on the Dales, kicking stones and not doing anything. It's beautiful. I think it is. I think it's possibly his best composition.
Yeah, I think you might be right. Yeah, it's a great choice. Yeah, fantastic. My number three is your number nine. So we talked about it in the last episode, One Foot in the Grave.
Yes.
By Eric Idle. So we won't go over that. So if you didn't catch that, go back to part one and you'll hear us talk about One Foot in the Grave. Your number three then, Rob, is a classic still going, a show that's still going. You know, who knows? It might give Last of the Summer Wine a run for its money eventually if they keep making series of this.
I mean, if they keep... Churning it out.
A show you're personally involved in, you've got a lot of history with. Your number three is...
It's the Red Dwarf theme tune.
Yes. Yeah, etc.
Yeah, something like that.
Which we borrowed for the Red Dwarf podcast, Shipwrecked and Comatose. They borrowed the name of the show from the theme tune. So that, again, shows how this, again, is a theme that's sort of escaped, I think, in some ways from the show.
I think it has. I think it has, definitely. So, yeah, you know, I'm not going to bore people with my personal history, but I am a huge Red Dwarf fan. Have been since I was a kid, since the show first started. Massive, massive fan. Very, very lucky that one of my earliest jobs in TV was actually working on it when it first came back to Dave. So I've got real, real personal connection to it. There's nothing, when you work in television, film, any kind of like creative industry, if you get to work on one of the shows that inspired you to work in that industry, it's just beautiful. Incredible. And this piece of music, I think you can't undersell how significant this piece of music was, I think, to the success of the show. You know, obviously the writing and the comedy and the word of mouth in the early days, you know, helped this show like it helps anything else. But it's such a fucking good song.
No, it is. It is, yeah.
And again, there are kind of three. So it's Howard Goodall again. And I think although he's far less prolific than someone like Ronnie Hazelhurst, I think across the kind of the late 80s and into the early 90s, Howard Goodall was kind of you could put him in that same kind of category. Maybe he's been responsible for some of the best pieces of sitcom music, and he has that same ability, I think, to write something absolutely appropriate for the show that he's working on. And the Red Dwarf theme, it's fantastic. So obviously the first couple of series, the opening theme is just this little sting of music, which is a lovely little sting, and then it's the closing theme is what we really think of as the Red Dwarf theme. Later series, they brought in a kind of an orchestrated version of the closing song, but it's this wonderful song, which is really upbeat and a little bit gospel choir almost. Yeah. Yeah, it's got these kind of like tambourines going on, and it's really an exciting, upbeat, enthusiastic piece of music with genuinely depressing lyrics. Like it's somebody basically singing about how they dream of living a better life because they're stuck on this awful job where they're basically floating in space doing nothing, and they just sit and imagine one day being able to live somewhere nice with their feet hanging in the sea, drink, you know, shipwrecked and comatose. They just want to be on a beach half drunk. And it's a weird kind of upbeat, pessimistic, quite melancholy kind of a song, but it's also just really catchy.
Fun in the sun.
Bum, 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 bum.
It's strange though, isn't it? Because it doesn't fit. It's because obviously Red Dwarf is a science fiction sitcom. It's probably the most overtly science fiction sitcom, I think, that's as popular as we've ever seen in British comedy. You know, it does proper science fiction storylines, all this kind of stuff. So you'd imagine, you know, that it would have, I mean, if this was America, it would have had a proper science fiction theme to it, you know, like you get in sci-fi shows. Whereas this, it's a jaunty song about getting pissed on a beach, basically. That is so British. That is just so wonderfully British. And obviously Red Dwarf is so wonderfully British in all the ways, even though it's set however many years in the future in space, you know, with all this stuff. And I think that sums it up, doesn't it? It's eccentric. It's an eccentric theme for an eccentric show.
Exactly. And it's this kind of, it doesn't quite fit, but you couldn't imagine it without it.
Yeah,
and you know, and I thought, you know, you can kind of obviously compare it to things like Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, which is kind of its spiritual grandfather, I guess. Where they also had a very, obviously not an original composition, it was an Eagles song, but that has a very kind of like jaunty, not quite science fiction-y kind of slightly off-kilter piece of music. And I think that there's that DNA comes through into this, especially because in the first series as well, you open with a very serious orchestral, you know, the opening title sequence was very, very short, and it's this piece of music that kind of goes do. And so you're sort of shown the vastness of space, the emptiness of space. You see a tiny little insignificant astronaut on this massive spaceship, And that is very science fiction-y. And then you have this very science fiction-y story, even though it's very funny. And then it just smacks you around the face at the end with this bum, 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 da, da, da. And it's a brilliant juxtaposition that, of course, just fits perfectly. And yeah, I think it kind of, like a lot of these great theme tunes, it's kind of, it's not become like a chart topper in its own right. It's not that it's become a sort of a song that people put on to listen to, but I feel like even people who didn't watch the show at the time, it's there, it's in their head. I think it's a very, very recognisable outside of the fandom, outside of the audience.
Absolutely, yeah. It's great. It's a gem. It's a gem. It's a lot of fun. It's always one that puts a smile on your face. It's wonderful. So,
and it is. It's so much fun. So much fun.
Fun, fun, fun in the sun, sun, sun. Absolutely, yeah. So, so to that, speaking of fun, I think we both, our number two is the same one. And I think this is fun as well. This is one of my most favourite comedy songs for any kind of sitcom. This is the music to Dad's Army.
Who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think we're on the run? We are the boys who will stop your little game. We are the boys who will make you think again. 'Cause who do you think you are kidding, Mr. Hitler, if you think old England's done?
The classic, one of the most classic sitcoms in British history. Set in the war, much like Hello, Hello, but very different. And this is, I just love it. Every time the show comes on, I'm singing along to Who Do You Think You Are Kidding, Mr. Hitler?
If you think old England's done,
we are the boys. It's great. It was written by Jimmy Perry, one of the writers of the show, alongside Derek Taverner. And he got one of his childhood idols, who was the wartime entertainer, Bud Flanagan, who died like less than a year or just over a year after the show aired in the late 1960s. He paid him 100 guineas, so about $2,000 in today's money, to do the theme for this. And everyone thought it was a song from the war because it was a pastiche of wartime songs.
It's perfect.
But it
it's
fits
so perfect.
Brilliantly, doesn't it? You know, it's like, it is along the lines of like, Hitler has only got one ball, you know, all that kind of stuff. I love it. Every time, it is perfect for this show, which is always obviously all about these gentle, doddering old men who are trying to fight in the home front to, are preparing for a Nazi invasion. And it fits beautifully, doesn't it, Rob, this?
It does. And I think it's the summation of everything we've talked about what makes a good theme tune, whether it highlights the setting we're going into, whether it highlights the characters we're going to see. I think it does all of those things. But it also, as I keep saying, is like a really big thing for me. It sounds like something that already exists.
It really does.
It, the same way that the Vicar of Dibley sounds like a hymn that you have known your whole life that has already existed. If you were growing up and you were watching Dad's Army and somebody said, oh yeah, this was a really popular song during the war, you'd go, oh, okay, because it's not parody. It's not making fun of. It's not kind of like winking. It doesn't sound like it was composed in the 60s. It's a beautifully skilled piece of songwriting, a piece of composition. And yeah, getting Bud Flanagan is just perfect. It provides an authenticity to it. And I think what it does, because it sounds so genuine, so authentic, it really helps to take you into the setting of those kind of like those mid-war years. You kind of like the episode opens up and it is a little bit jaunty and it's got that slightly kind of like, you know, waving your fist at Hitler, but also it's sort of like slyly making fun of the attempts. You know, Mr. Brown goes off to town, but then he comes home and he's waiting with his gun. You know, it's like these middle-aged men in their slippers waiting for Hitler to turn up. It's like, that is silly. Yeah. That is the fact that we did it, the fact that it was part of our culture during those war years is silly. But at the same time, it was very, very noble and very brave, and, you know, everyone trying to do their bit, you know, that, which is something that Dad's Army kind of like highlights a lot. So it's one of the most perfect sitcom theme tunes. And I was thinking about it when I was looking at the list, you know, we've both put it as number two. I'm not surprised that we both put it as a number two on our lists. And I think if I was arguing about the list and the positions from a different angle, with a different perspective, I'd almost be prepared to say that it's the best British sitcom theme tune of all time. I'd almost be prepared to make that
it's
argument.
Close. Yeah.
Depending on the exact specifications that we're going for making that claim, because I think it does so much right, and it's so synonymous, and I know it sounds really pretentious, but it's very authentic and it's very true.
Totally, it is. It's just fab. And I couldn't believe it when I found out it wasn't a wartime song. That was the biggest shock for me. I was like, wow, okay, this is actually created for. Yeah, it's brilliant. So yeah, I love it. Absolutely brilliant, and
it's fun. So it's just fun.
I will always sing it every time Dad's Army comes on the television or wherever I hear it.
Oh,
every single time I'm singing along.
You hear that music and you instantly start seeing arrows in your head, like moving towards the map. Yeah. It's just like da 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 da.
It's great. Perfect. So. Let's talk about my number one then, which is your number five. And I would say this is the most famous British sitcom theme of all time. And because it's probably the most popular sitcom in British history. And I would say, for many, the best. So I've gone for Only Fools and Horses.
Suitcase from the van, 'cause if you are the best, but you don't ask questions, then brother, I'm your man. 'Cause where it all comes from is a mystery. It's like the changing of the seasons and the tides of the sea. But here's the one that's driving me berserk. Why do only fools and horses work? La, la, la,
I mean, it's inevitably going to come up on any list, isn't it? Of tops.
Yeah. Any list of these things. And I'm assuming you're talking the original Ronnie Hazelhurst. That's what we're talking about. Greatest of all time.
I do like that.
I do.
You only get that in the first few episodes at various points. You know, right at the very beginning in the early 80s when you're first meeting Del Boy and Ronnie and everyone. And it's... But obviously the song... John Sullivan, who wrote the show, is so famous, and it's played over, you know, over the theme and all the shots of, you know, Nelson Mandela House and London of the 80s and this grimy sort of London, and then and much like Dad's Army in terms of it being a song written specifically for it, I think it's perfect for the setting and the characters. I think it works really, really well.
Yes.
In You know, it's all about put a pony in my pocket. I'll fetch the suitcase from the van. Ucky Street and all this kind of, it's establishing Ucky Street. It's establishing that you're dealing with con men ultimately, and
lovable con men.
And obviously, it's got the title in the theme. You know, why do only fools and horses work? The idea being, the whole idea of the title is that Del Boy and Rodney live, you know. They don't have jobs. They just make their money where they can. And it's almost like there is a freedom to their lifestyle and what they're living. You know, you've got to be a fool or a horse to go out and do a job. You could be living this hooky life. And it actually tries to make it sound fun, I think, being these characters.
It does. You feel like this, you know, this is Del Boy, or at least Del Boy's people, kind of telling you what a great life he's having.
Yeah. And interestingly, originally... Sullivan wanted Chaz and Dave to sing the song. And yeah. he called it a rockney style of music. So a mixture of rock and roll and traditional Cockney music. And it's interesting because there is a real... And you get it later on, much later on, when you get the prequel series that Sullivan writes about young Del Boy, not long before he dies. And that's called Rock and Chips. And it's set in the 60s. And it's very much about Del Boy coming of age in the middle of that kind of revolution of music. And it always feels like, even though the show isn't about music, that in a way, the kind of lingering embers of that world and that musical tradition and rock and roll, it's part of Only Fools and Horses. So it makes sense to me that you'd have a song like this in there. And in the end, Chas and Dave did get to sing for Only Fools and Horses because they did the closing credit song for the Jolly Boys outing at the end of the 80s.
Well, I've been working hard to reach a bit target. Do one of you bump for a day trip down to Margate. I'm going to blow the lot tomorrow on all my family. We catch the coach at 8 to Lumpy Lane. We're all to see the sea.
Behave yourself, Uncle Albert,
or you won't be going
down to Margate. And don't forget your bucket of spades and cottage and all.
We'll have a beer by the sea. Yeah, so I don't know. What do you think about this? Because obviously you've put it in your top five as well. Would you agree that it sort of does have... It sort of fits not only that what Only Fools and Horses is about, but that it's sort of brewed up with the kind of time, you know, start of the 80s, end of the 70s, where music is quite important to this kind of world.
Yeah, I think that's a big part of why it works so well, is the fact that it sounds like a Chas and Dave song, but it actually sounds a bit more authentic, actually, than Chas and Dave. You know, Chas and Dave is, they're very much the kind of the branded Cockney, you know, the kind of, you know, roll out the barrel, but it's barrel, but it's kind of like, you know, with the big Cockney branding stamp on it. Whereas this, I think because it is John Sullivan singing it, it has an authenticity to it, where it does almost sound like a bloke sat in his bedroom writing a song about what he thinks and what he feels about his, you know, where he's growing up and his culture. And it does have that slight rock influence to it. It's a, you know, it is definitely a rockier, especially in the closing credits with the kind of like the drum beat that brings you in. Yeah, it's like it's a very, very rocky kind of vibe to it. I think it's brilliant. It's a brilliant composition, similar in a way to Dad's Army, although Dad's Army I think does it to a fuller extent, in that again it does kind of sound like a pre-existing song, or it at least sounds like that kind of Chas and Dave style, and so it does bring you to the location. And you know what, we have sung the praises of Ronnie Hazelhurst because he is
the Don.
He is the John Williams of British sitcom theme tune writing. But his theme for One Foot in the Grave was not one of his best pieces. It's good, and it does sound like, you know, Wheeler Dealer. It does sound like that East End, and it's this kind of like sort of that noise to it. But the subsequent theme, because obviously there are like two, you know, there's the opening theme and the closing theme. Far more authentic, far more in tune with the characters, far more in tune with the life that they're living. And again, paints a picture of what we're about to experience. And Only Fools and Horses is, you know, it's like arguably the greatest British sitcom. It's at least the most successful, most popular, most well-known. And everybody knows that theme tune. And again, whether you watched it religiously, whether you're a big fan of it, everybody knows it. And everybody knows the theme tune and nobody knows the words.
Yeah, you are.
Everybody's going, Cookie Street, la, you get a half house,
David Bowie LP.
Nobody knows the words.
When you see...
You put a pony in your pocket.
But when you look at the words, it's really good. You know, I've got some half-price cracked ice and miles of carpet tiles, TVs, deep freeze, and David Bowie LPs. It's clever. You know, it's lots of... Yeah.
It's brilliant.
Gold chains. Yeah, it's great.
It's brilliant. Yeah. And I love the fact that the opening theme kind of sets up the concept of how they do it and what they do. So it's that kind of, you know, fetch the suitcase from the van, because if you want the best ones, but you don't ask questions and all that kind of stuff. But then it's the closing theme where basically he's just telling you the list. He's just giving you the list. So the first one, he's playing the patter. He's getting the punters in, and they're stood there. And they go, all right, then, he's got the suitcase from the van. I want the best ones, and I won't ask questions. So, brother, you're my man. And then he's waiting. You get the episode, and then you get the list of what he's got.
It's
a brilliant, and it's so much fun, and it's so sing-along to-able, even if you don't know the... Even
I
if
think
you don't know
Trevor Francis tracksuits from A Mushy Shepherd's Bush is dated, though.
No income tax, no VAT.
It's funny because people don't always remember the lyrics. They know the tune. They can hum the tune. But the lyrics are important to it. But it's a funny one in that way. Whereas I think with Dad's Army, people can remember the lyrics. You know, maybe because it's simpler. Maybe because with that one, it's just, you know... Who do you think you're kidding, Mr. Hitler? Oh, you know, that kind of, it's great, but it's simpler. Whereas with this, there's a lot to remember. So I think maybe that's why it's not quite lingered in the same way in terms of the lyrics. But the tune, 100%.
Yeah, and I think it's one of those sort of, it is almost like the sitting around the piano, the kind of the join in. You can sit, you can be in a room full of people, and if you just suddenly go, everyone kind of like joins in at their own point.
So yeah, that's my number one. I love it completely. Although I could have put a bunch of others at number one, but that's mine. All we've got left to do is your number one, which is drum roll.
I won't do a drum roll because it'll knock my computer off and my microphone will come unplugged. I'll imagine a drum roll. It's Blackadder. I mean, to be honest, like, listening to my list so far, kind of like anyone's kind of like working out the pieces and figuring out what hasn't been mentioned yet. It might have been obvious to some people it was going to be Blackadder.
Yeah.
It's our old buddy Howard Goodall again. And the Blackadder is, you know, we've talked about some really amazing TV themes, sitcom themes, and there are some fantastic ones out there. And I bow to Ronnie Hazelhurst. But for so many different reasons, I think Howard Goodall is kind of like the successor to Ronnie Hazelhurst, at least in that kind of that the late 80s, early 90s kind of period. Blackadder is a unique show. We've mentioned Blackadder. We've talked about Blackadder on other episodes in other contexts, but we still haven't got to grips with Blackadder with its own episode because it is worthy of it. It's going to need a big chunky discussion. But one of the wonderful things about Blackadder is why I love the theme so much, and it's at the top of my list, is because it constantly reinvents itself as a show and therefore as a TV theme. The versatility of this theme, this piece of music, this composition is amazing. It's fantastic. And I guess in a way it's almost a cheat. Because, you know, we've talked about Only Fools and Horses kind of, you know, it had two sets of themes. And then once it's settled on the most familiar ones, it actually has an opening theme and a closing theme. So it's kind of like it's a little cheeky little extra bonus in there for you. Blackadder kind of like takes that to the extreme, because not only have you've got four series of Blackadder, each with a different theme, some of those with a different opening and a different closing theme. Plus you've got the Millennium Special that they did, which has a whole new theme. It's just a beautiful composition. And so I'll like just to briefly go through them. I don't want to like waffle too much as we come to our closing here. But so series one, I know a lot of people have very mixed feelings about series one of Blackadder, and I can't wait till we get to grips with that, till we have an episode based on it. But that is a very sort of, it's the kind of the flashing blade, the kind of the old kind of 70s adventure serials. It's got a very kind of like triumphant, like, and it has the lyrics to it, and they are kind of like, you know, riding through the glen and all this kind of stuff. And it's a beautiful kind of pastiche of that kind of theme tune, almost the kind of the Robin Hoodie kind of thing, almost in a way. And of course, we then you know, we move into the second series, which is Elizabethan, and Howard Goodall completely reinvents the theme tune as this kind of Elizabethan sounding, with kind of like lutes and pipes, yeah, and drums and stuff. But the great thing with that series in particular, in the second series, is that so there's the opening theme, which is the very familiar Blackadder kind of like da 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 da, but in this kind of like I can't do this out of a loop, but you know, like pipes and lutes sounds.
Well, by the magic of editing,
it sounds like this.
Listeners might well be hearing it. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There we go. But what's beautiful with that series in particular, I think, is the fact that each episode ends with a minstrel version. And on screen, we actually see this sort of minstrel who is annoying Blackadder as he's trying to sort of like exit the Queen's palace. But each episode has a different set of lyrics in its closing that kind of like sum up the story that we've just seen. Again, very Shakespearean. Very Elizabethan in its kind of like theatrical conventions, this idea of a fool or a comic or a lutist who then kind of like gives us a little summing up of what we've just watched, which is brilliant and beautiful. Blackadder the Third. Which, you know, I'm not going to shy away from the fact that it's my favourite. I think for a lot of people, it's their favourite. We've touched on this before, and we will touch on it again, I'm sure. That's a particularly good, I think. It's one of my favourite variations on the theme. Because you've got, again, it sort of opens up with this very sort of Regency, sort of like grand, again, there's some sort of, you know, some harpsichord and that kind of thing going on, but this is very sort of grand Regency feel to the opening, like and we see Blackadder looking through a library, and then there's the conceit that, you know, behind all this great literature, he's actually reading like saucy, you know, bodice ripping novels. And what, again, works so beautifully with this is that after opening each episode with this very grand Regency-style variation on the theme, the episodes then close with this kind of like more sort of like bawdy kind of like pub minstrel version with kind of like guitars and drums. And there are no lyrics per se, but there's a kind of a use of lyrics to supplement the music or wording. So there's a kind of like, you've almost got these kind of chanting, like, you know, Adder, Blackadder,
da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Yeah.
And again, it's a brilliant sort of like historical conceit, this idea of the two sides of Regency, the kind of the prim and the proper and the very sort of like regal at the start. And then this kind of like slightly more bawdy, down to earth, you know, lower stairs, lower quarters kind of variation, which I think is just, again, Howard Goodall just like nailing it perfectly. And it gets a little bit rocky and a little bit kind of electric guitar-y towards the end of it. It is fantastic. And then I guess, again, you know, I know I'm describing things that people probably know, but I feel like I should gush is the reason it's my favourite.
Yeah, you got to do it.
We then get Blackadder Goes Forth.
I'll
which for so many reasons kind of like takes Blackadder in a slightly different direction. You know, it is arguably a little bit more grounded and a little bit heavier on the pathos than previous series, and the music in that is just sublime. It's less varied than the previous series, but it just uses the melodies and it turns it into a military march, and it works so brilliantly. This is what is so fantastic about it as a composition, and Goodall as a composer, is that each of these series, the theme tune is instantly identifiable, yet it also sounds perfectly sort of period appropriate. And I think that the marching band version is particularly fun, and I think we're a bit more used to that, because quite often marching bands, they'll play, you know, on the Sally Army and stuff, they play the sort of the standards, and then they'll do a cheeky one and they'll throw in like the theme to Superman, or they'll do, you know, they'll do the Only Fools and Horses thing, you know, that sort of, like, marching bands quite like doing that. So maybe we're a bit more accustomed to that sort of, to playing around with it in that way. But it, I think it works really well in the marching band version.
You can't beat obviously Baldrick's little triangle.
Oh, his little ting! it's fantastic. Again, it's just that use of a visual gag within the music.
Yeah,
it's very funny. It's just fantastic. It's indicative of the show. But I actually even like... Well, they tweak it a little bit for the Christmas special.
That's a good one.
It's actually really nice, because they do a little bit of the choral, and they do the kind of they Christmasify it.
Sleigh bells,
some sleigh bells, exactly, and like cherubs singing. So again, beautiful, like, and also, I mean, Howard Goodall, his background is in kind of that kind of like almost kind of like choral church music, that kind of like hymn and choir composition. So he's brilliant at that kind of stuff.
Yeah. For more of us talking about that, go back to our Christmas special last year, where we got into Blackadder's Christmas Carol.
It's an absolute if anyone hasn't seen it, my goodness, you have to go and see it. Just,
it's amazing.
You know, and all of these. And then I guess my sort of final salute to this amazing piece of sitcom composition, and that I think is what makes, you know, we've talked a lot about the fact that the best sitcom theme tunes, it's not just about having some little wah 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 wow, it's about having really well composed and appropriately composed pieces of music, which I'd say, you know, Ronnie Hazelhurst and Howard Goodall are both amazing, in Hazelhurst's case, both amazing at creating product appropriate music. But yeah, the grand finale of Blackadder, the Millennium special that they did. We'll talk about one day. I'm a lot more fond of it than a lot of people are.
Yeah, I like it as well.
Obviously, you get I think it's actually pretty strong.
Yeah,
but you get nice kind of like orchestral kind of you know, slightly more cinematic sort of lead into that, and it's similar to what we've heard before. I don't think it's the most unique opening Blackadder. It's just a nice big orchestral version, but then they end it with a fucking blinder. of a song version. Like the lyrics are just some of the best Blackadder theme tune lyrics, I think, you know, out there. Really, really fun, really good. That sort of weird kind of like jingoistic, but not really, but nod nod wink wink, but we don't take it too seriously. Yeah. We know we're shit, but let's pretend we're not. It's that beautiful thing that Blackadder does so well, and it's sums up, almost sums up our audience, our relationship with Blackadder, because it's kind of like the final kind of lines of this version, and basically as it stands now, that's the final moment of any Blackadder ever, is basically, spoilers, within the context of this story, Blackadder has now become the King of England. and this, you know, and the lyrics in this final version of the theme tune are basically saying, finally it's happened, and isn't this the best thing that could have happened to the country? It's, you know, finally we've got a bastard on the throne. It's like, it's a beautiful way to say goodbye to the whole saga. Yeah. And I think it's a beautiful final variation of what I think is arguably, and I have just argued it, one of the best sitcom theme tunes ever composed. And I think the massive versatility of it is one of the reasons that I just adore it so much.
Yeah. I mean, I know it didn't make my list, but it's hard to argue with this, because I think the variation you've described really well over those multiple series and that special, those couple of specials, is unlike anything else, actually, in British sitcom history. No one has done that. I mean, granted, Blackadder is quite unique in what it does anyway, in that it's multiple different, you know, characters through time, which gives Goodall the opportunity to experiment in a way that a lot of other sitcoms don't have, granted.
However, he
could have basically stuck to a fairly similar formula for all of it, but he doesn't. He takes that great through line, that great motif, really recognisable motif, and he plays with it in such a great way. So I get it. I get why it's your number one. And I think it should be. It should be on there in any list. I feel quite bad not putting it on my own now, to be honest, because it's really good.
You bastard.
So yeah, totally get it. Totally get it. Well, that's it, really. We're at the end now. We've done both of our 10 top comedy themes of all time. There are a myriad amount of possible contenders for this. I'm sure you've got your, listening, you've got your own 10. Some of these might be in it, some might not. You might have others. You know, you could make multiple lists with this. But I think we've pretty much nailed many of the greats here in these
lists. I think that's it, is it the greats, isn't it? It's like, I've got a huge list of kind of, you know, honourable mentions and so many others which were kind of worthy of being in the top 10, but you can only put 10.
Mm.
And that's almost it, isn't it? It's almost like each number, it's like, you know, number one, number two. It's like, well, number two could easily have three different songs at that point. Number four could have five different songs. There are some real bangers out there.
Yeah, there are. And you know, I think it would be interesting, you know, let us know on social media, at YHB Watching Pod on Twitter and on Facebook. Let us know, right, if what your 10 are. You know, give us a shout, because it'd be really interesting. And, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe we'll revisit this with people's 10s, you know, if you let us know and come up with some more lists and stuff. But it's been great. It's been great to do this. It's been great to go through them and get to enjoy a lot of these themes again. So this won't be the last top 10 we do as well. I think the next one we're going to do is, I think, our top 10 comedy movie spin-offs or comedy movie versions of sitcoms, which is going to be a really fun. It's going to be a really fun list. That there's going to be some shockers in there.
There's going to be some utter shit in there.
There is. I warn you.
Still going to make the top 10. Yeah,
probably. Yeah. So that's going to be fun. We're going to be doing that not too distant future. But we will be back fairly soon for another specific show exploration before we get to some of these other special episodes coming up. And before we do, Rob, why don't you point people towards where they can find you online and what else you're up to?
Absolutely. The easiest place, as I always say, is to find me on Twitter. And that is @4ducks, which is FORDUCKS. Whatever I'm doing, I tend to promote it there, and I'll pimp it out there, and you can find out what I'm up to. But also, generally speaking, on the We Made This podcasting network, I crop up usually as a guest, sometimes a guest host, on things like 616, Real Talk, and anyone else that invites me on. So stick my name in the search bar and see where I pop up.
Yeah, similar for me, really, to be fair. Yeah. You can find a general list of what I'm doing at my website, culturalconversation.co.uk, or my writing, podcast, books, etc. I mainly hang around on Twitter at AJ Black Writer. Come and follow me. But you can also find me on Facebook and generally on the We Made This network, @we_made_this on Twitter, We Made This on Facebook. So come and check us out. Also, all our other podcasts, some of the ones Rob's just mentioned, at wemadethisnetwork.com. So hop over and see what else we're up to. But Thanks anyway for listening to this episode. And please subscribe to You Have Been Watching and give us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. That'd be brilliant if you could. And if you really want to help out We Made This, please consider supporting us on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/WeMadeThis. Sitcom theme tunes, however, is not all we're talking about. So we'll give you a little taste of what you might have missed on the network in just a moment. But until next time, you have been listening to Tony Black.
And Robert Turnbull.
And we're off to play a lute.
Well, I don't know what your evening's plans are, but I was just going to have a cup of tea, actually.
Worst outro ever.
If you're a fan of British comedy, particularly broadcast on the BBC, that's been going for a decade or three, try Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked and Comatose, covering all of Red Dwarf, including those additional specials, heroes and the foes. Anything else? Well, who knows? So find us on your podcast apps and be greeted by some friendly chaps and Mark's deep obsession with all cats. It's Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked, Shipwrecked and Comatose. We're not on Insta, it's Twitter's hard mode. Red Dwarf Pods are social. Both subscribe and enjoy us a load.